Welcome to Just JKing, the podcast where we transform your HR headaches into high fives. Whether you're a founder, CEO, or just someone with HR questions you're too afraid to ask, we've got the insights, laughs, and light bulb moments that you crave.
Enjoying the show? Hit that five-star review and subscribe now so you never miss out.
Welcome back to Just JKing with Jennifer and Kim.
I'm really excited to introduce our next guest, Tori Stevenson, who is the CFO at Stellar Algo, a high-growth, SaaS-based company focused on helping sports teams and entertainment properties to connect with their fans.
Tori is an experienced finance professional specializing in scale-up and high-growth technology companies with specific expertise in software as a service or SaaS organizations.
She's also passionate about supporting other women, previously serving as the vice chair and treasurer for Fast and Female, and having served as treasurer at Chick Geek. She is a CPA and is also responsible for all things people and culture at Stellar Algo. Welcome, Tori.
Thanks much. I'm really happy to be here today.
So why don't we start with, tell us a little bit about yourself and your history. You've got this really unique role in finance and also supporting people and culture, but where did it all begin for you?
Yeah, it's funny enough, I always knew I wanted to be a CPA. Like in my eighth grade yearbook, it says future occupation accountant. Like I knew from very early on, but really it's because my dad is an accountant and I saw from him that it was a lot more than just accounting. You know, it was really about like understanding how businesses work and helping them solve complex problems. And so, you know, early on, I knew that was what I wanted to do. I didn't really know how or where. I just wanted to get deeply involved in businesses and solving their problems. So I ultimately ended up at PwC. And through there, I got exposed to a variety of different industries. So everything from oil and gas to real estate, large public companies, small startups, and found my passion in the tech industry because I was working with, you know, small, medium businesses that were growing, that were changing, that had really complex problems. And I got to be a little bit more of an advisor to them than just an auditor that came in once a year. So that really pulled me into the tech space, but also was my first foray into working with people teams. So I was super passionate about the work I was doing, really loved my experience there, and then had the opportunity to work with the campus talent acquisition team every year. So I was hiring 100 students every year. I'd take a break from doing auditing and accounting for like 3 or 4 months and just do talent acquisition full time. And it was like a great opportunity to learn more about the people function of businesses, seeing a little bit more of how that works. But ultimately, you know, I was there for 7 years and then decided I wanted to understand one business much more deeply than many. So made the leap to leave PwC and ultimately ended up at Stellar. And yeah, right now I'm responsible for overseeing our finance function, but also our people function. And, you know, that at the end of the day is two of our most critical resources, our people and our money.
Fantastic. So a little known story is I do come from a whole family of accountants, and I have been on multiple audits when I was probably far too young to be climbing shelves in factories and counting little fuzzy things. But that being said, so I've experienced both on the understanding what it is to actually do a physical audit, as well as on the people side. And obviously, I chose the people side. You spent most of your career and your education on the finance side, and we know how different those two perspectives in a business can be. How do you bring it all together in your role?
It's a great question. You know, I think it may seem like they can be very like competing priorities, but I actually find them to be quite similar, especially in a small and small businesses or growing businesses, and in technology in particular. Like, because we're building a software, our biggest resources are people and our team and their minds, right? And what they're building. So when I'm thinking about the finances of a business or our business and how we scale and grow and achieve our ultimate vision. It's through our people. And so it's making sure that our people are engaged in doing the best work they can do. But in order to do that, we also have to be a sustainable business, right? So we need to make sure that we've got the money to invest in our people and in growing. So it's they're really one in the same in a lot of ways. Like our biggest expenses are people, and that's the biggest thing that drives our growth.
So interesting is Jennifer and I have chatted before about reductions in force or RIFs as one of the ways that companies will often try to save money. And so being on the CFO side and understanding sometimes in businesses that you're looking at expenses or in a high growth company, you might be looking at, you know, VC backed at like a burn rate or whatever, but also understanding how important people and culture are to the organization. Where does your head go when it comes to deciding whether or not to ever do a reduction in force as one of the ways to reduce expenses overall?
Yeah, I mean, I try and think, you know, stellar first and your company first, and that on the surface might seem like that's, you know, money first, but it's really not. It's about, you know, without our people, there is nothing there. So it's about finding that balancing act between putting our people in the position that they can be successful in order to achieve the big vision of the company and be excited about work, but at the same time having the financial resources to invest in our existing team and growing our team. And there might be times where that's at odds, right? There might be times where in order to continue to grow as a business, we may need to reduce expenses, with your biggest expense being your people. Like naturally that can be a way to look at it. You know, I think about it personally about what do we need to achieve our ultimate goal, right? And who are the people and what are the roles we need to do that? I think, you know, you never take a decision to reduce your workforce lightly, but it's really about like, what are the needs of the business and what roles do we need in order to achieve that ultimate vision? I don't know if that answers your question.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely does. And it demonstrates, you know, how balanced your approach needs to be. I guess one of the things we've chatted about previously was sometimes a RIF or a reduction in force or reducing the headcount can often be a short-term solution for a much longer, you know, larger problem. And what we have seen time and time again is that when that is the first solution, it often ends up reversing itself fairly quickly afterwards. And then you're in a situation where you have to go and rehire people and retrain them. And of course, you've lost all of that historical knowledge. So that was a little bit about the conversation we had a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, I definitely can relate to that from my experience as well.
I think, Tori, that you've just like busted this huge myth that a lot of HR people have about reporting into finance as HR people. And I have certainly could be quoted more than once as saying, I simply would not accept an HR role that reported into finance. And that's kind of because historically, I don't know if it was competing priorities or just completely different outlooks. HR departments do cost substantial amounts of money to run. We tend to spend a lot if it's being done well, and we don't actually generate any revenue at all, nor do we necessarily protect the money like finance people. So I think competing priorities has sort of been the least of it in the finance people I've worked with, but yet you just so eloquently explained why they absolutely make sense together. And it kind of blew my mind because that's again, like, would have been a myth for me like half an hour ago. What is really missing in those other types of finance and HR relationships that, I mean, it seems so obvious the way you explained it, but yet it's so not the case in most organizations that they work that seamlessly together.
Yeah, I really love that question. You know, I look at the role of finance as, you know, in some ways, like an advisory role or subject matter expertise. Like I see my role is to bring my specific perspective and knowledge to the table in terms of identifying opportunities and risks within the business. At the end of the day, that perspective I think is just as valuable as a perspective on the voice of our people, the voice of our product, the voice of our technology. It's just one lens to the problems we're trying to solve as a business. You know, I don't see myself necessarily as like the gatekeeper, the person to say no all the time. Like, you know, sometimes that happens, but I think, you know, some people have either a stereotype or a perspective on a finance function that it's there to like say no, safeguard assets, be a obstacle to overcome. And I really see it more as just a perspective on the different risks that's focused on our financial resources, right? So it's one voice at the table, but that voice is equally as important as the voice of our people, our product, our customers. And so I think that might be a little bit more of a unique perspective, and that allows me to approach it more easily from seeing the needs of our people and the needs from a financial perspective.
What I love about that, Tori, is when you talk about, you know, the balancing of priorities and needing to say no, I think that if I took out the words finance and replaced it with HR, it's the exact same thing. We are, you know, compliance-based in many cases, safeguarding an organization from making decisions that could be drastic in their consequences. And we often have to say no. And I don't know that I ever really thought about it that way, that how similar the need to kind of be the gatekeeper in some cases is between finance and HR.
Yeah, the way you were just describing HR, I could hear you describing a finance function in the same way. Compliance is important. There's rules to it. But at the end of the day, there's a lot of gray as well. And it's about balancing, ensuring you're staying compliant with what you need to stay compliant with, and then the needs of the business and your people.
I think I love the part too, where it's really about managing risk to the company, because there are risks inherent in how you manage your people and how you maintain your workforce. And I'm just thinking now that maybe they need some more exposure to that in finance programs so that they understand it a little bit more thoroughly. It's not just a question of headcount. There's risks associated with losing those people, which are attached to brains that might be very rare and quite important to the business. And I think that's a huge missing piece. It's just another source of risk that you have to be aware of. It's not a no-brainer. We can't just find 10 more of those a week from now if we change our mind. Those people are gone. They've taken their organizational information and context with them. And we now have to turn around and try to build that the hard way from scratch with another group of people. And I think that just really gets missed a lot. I feel like every HR person that's listening to this is going to be, well, I can now report into finance if it's Tori.
That's right. We can all report to finance if it's Tori.
That's you right. Know, it may not be common across the board, like I've got a great network of fellow, for the most part, female CFOs at tech companies here in Calgary who also lead HR functions. So it's been a really great resource, I would say, for me to have, but also people in a similar situation.
So I want to turn to talk about data a bit. Mm-hmm. And so as a CFO or as a CPA, obviously spending a lot of time in the numbers, in HR, especially in the new generation of HR professionals, really being focused on data and understanding how data helps us to predict trends and to put together programs that are going to make sense for the business. But also the business that you are in at Stellar Algo has everything to do with fan data. So tell us a little bit about how all of those three things come together and how important data is in your everyday practice, both obviously as a CFO, as a leader within a high growth business, and also as an HR leader.
Yeah, you know, data is so inherent in everything we do, it's almost like it takes you a moment to step back and go, okay, when am I at, like, how much data am I actually using? You'd probably be surprised by how many data-driven decisions you're making. You know, it's the foundation of a finance function, right? It's, you know, you're looking back at historical numbers, you're trying to predict future numbers using that and other data points within the industry. I'm always trying to get more data on the market and look at how that should influence our projections going forward. It's really foundational on the finance side. I think because of that, I bring a bit more of that lens to the people side as well. So when we're looking at our performance as a people function, when we're looking at our goals on a quarterly basis, it's about how do we measure these things? How are we measuring them now? How do we know if we've been successful to measure it, you know, 3 months from now or a year from now? So that can be everything from like days to close for hiring positions. So how many days from when the posting goes live until we actually have a signed offer with a candidate? How do we, you know, manage that time period while still maintaining quality? And then you get into, okay, well, what does quality mean, right? And how do we measure turnover rates within our teams or engagement scores for our team to ensure that they're happy and doing their best work? So I think it shows up in a lot of what I do in both the finance and people side. And, you know, as a leadership team and a data-based organization, we're really focused on quarterly KPIs and measurable outcomes across the board.
And so have you cracked the code that all HR people want to know is, have you found the predictive analytics that are going to really help us to both hire and retain the most talented people? Like, what have you done with data with the CFO brain or with the CPA training that we might be able to impart on some businesses who are maybe going into a high growth period? What have you learned?
I mean, I wish I've cracked the code. I don't know that there is a magic answer. You know, at the end of the day, there's still an art to the science. So you're dealing with people, right? Like, it's never going to be a perfect predictive number. But I would say what we continually try to do is like iterate quickly. That's part of the nature of the tech environment. So try things, like try different measures, look at different numbers, see what that changes in the business and in your team. I would say just like don't be afraid to try out different things. So we've looked at everything from, like, we focus a lot on our net promoter score, but then we also look at some of those other metrics I mentioned, like days to hire, or we have a few other engagement surveys where we measure, try and predict our net promoter score values. But I'm really focused right now on short-term quarterly metrics and trying different things each quarter to see if we can crack the code.
I love that. What advice would you give to traditional CPAs or CPAs coming from this very traditional training ground? Because mm-hmm. It still is a very traditional training ground, and moving into a tech high growth organization, SaaS based, how would somebody coming out of school or somebody who is a traditionally trained CPA know that they would have what it takes to do what you do?
That's a great question. You know, I think about, there's a few, you know, sayings that come to mind when you bring that up. Like, I think a lot of what I learned at PwC working in a traditional CPA firm has really led to skills that I've carried with me in my career. So, you know, relentless curiosity, like asking tons of questions of everybody, of all functions, just really trying to learn more. Not being afraid to not know things or be wrong. I would say that coming out of traditional education and, you know, post-secondary degree or the CPA program, if you don't get something right, you know, you don't get the mark. It's like bad to be wrong. In career and in life, like, being wrong is how you learn things. I read this in a book recently, but, like, you know, when you find out you're wrong about something, you're just one step closer to being right about it. Like, you've learned more. You've learned right. What you don't know. So I'm never afraid to say I don't know something, and that willingness to learn, I think, goes a long way. In terms of growth and scaling, I think a challenge I always think about is, you know, age and stage or right size. So like, what's the best solution for our current age and stage of a company? How can we approach this with a process that is right sized for us? So I'm not going to come in and have, you know, flow diagrams on how we hire people, or our expense policies aren't regimented to the dollar with like detailed approval processes. It's about what is right for our current age and stage. What's the right process for our size and scale? And I think that that can be a challenge if you've come from working in like a very large organization, right? A very structured place. So, you know, it's about what can we do now with the resources we have? What's the best next step to take? Like, those are the questions I'm always asking myself.
So in order to have that level of confidence in making mistakes,
mm-hmm.
so that it requires great trust, transparency, and psychological safety. So now, putting your HR hat on, or your people and culture thought leadership, how are you cultivating a culture of psychological safety, trust, and transparency at Stellar Algo?
I mean, the transparency is inherent, like it's really embedded in our culture right from the top. Our CEO is, you know, always errs on the side of more transparency. I think that's in his nature. So it shows up a lot in all we do. You know, I think that goes through in terms of just setting an example. Like, I always try and set an example of being open about mistakes that I've made with the team, or more broadly. I like to ask people a lot, catching them in the kitchen or the elevator, what'd you learn today? You know, what problems have you been working on? I think those types of questions lead people to think more about like the challenges they're working through, and drive some pride and accomplishment, as opposed to what did you win today, or what did you cross off the list, right? It's more about the work in progress than the outcome.
So we have one question, Tori, that we ask all of our guests.
Mm-hmm.
What's the one thing that you believe small businesses could do today to change the game for their people?
That's a good question. I feel like a few things come to mind. So I would say, you know, for me, it's one of the things I've been thinking about a lot is just really getting creative in how you meet the needs of your team, I guess. So first of all, it's about listening and hearing what they need and what they see from their seat. I think that you have to do that first and foremost. Then I go to a little bit of what we talked about earlier, which is, you know, sometimes you have to say no. If you're just doing everything your team asks for, it might not always be the best decision, but it's about what can you do now for your size and scale, right? So an example I think of is a few years ago, we wanted to reward our team more. But, you know, you can only do so much with the cash that you have, especially as a growing business. So we introduced a mid-year all-star break. So we heard from our team, the only time I can really unplug is over Christmas holidays. Everybody's off, so you don't come back to a slew of emails. So we took that same concept and applied it to the first week of July. So July 1st to 4th, we have a full office closure. July 1st is a holiday in Canada, July 4th in the US. Our clients are a little quieter around that time of year. So we've given that kind of mid-year break to our whole team to rest and recharge and tackle the second half of the year with a little bit more energy. And that's something with my finance hat, you know, it's more time off for people, but it's no more cash out the door, right? So finding that balance to rest and recharge and, you know, still meet the needs of our customers and give our team a little bit more energy. Like, it was a no-brainer, but it took listening to the team and getting a little bit creative in terms of how we did that. So yeah, I would say, don't feel like you need to do everything that your team, you have to listen. Don't feel like you need to do everything they're asking for, but find a way to creatively kind of meet the needs of your team with the resources you have.
That's so amazing. And what you get so much better value out of those days off than you would in the scattered, I come back super stressed version of how most companies manage time off. Because if you do come back to that huge to-do list and you have the most massive case of the Sundays at the end of your vacation, the company's not really getting the amount of rest and recharge that they are out of those days when everybody's off and you don't feel that kind of like nagging commitment to stay connected. I think that's so cool. I have another question. How do you balance staying at the forefront of these two very different fields in terms of what's trending? I can already tell you're a very creative person, so it sounds like some of it you just make up, which I love. But how do you sort of balance staying at the forefront of both of those fields so that you can lead two very different teams?
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing that makes it easier, easier in a lot of ways, is I've got really great teams, both at the leadership level, but then also within the people and finance functions, respectively. Our culture overall is very low ego. It's about focusing on like what's best for our customers, what's best for the business in order to achieve like our ultimate vision. And we've got a bunch of leaders in the organization who are, you know, we like to call them player coaches. So it's, you know, you're a doer and a leader, and everybody's pitching in to do what needs to be done. And so having that really helps overall. And I've got a great team that I work with who are all, you know, open-minded, willing to learn, willing to lean in. And that helps on the day-to-day front. And it also helps me with like keeping apprised of what's going on more broadly. You know, everybody's listening and learning. I've got that network of fellow CFOs in tech that are also leading people teams in Calgary. I've got resources like my meetings with Kim that help me bounce ideas off the wall. So I would say that really, really helps me to keep both perspectives in mind as much as I can.
So we know that HR is often the loneliest job. And when you're in a startup or scale up, very, very small organization, there's often no peer group, whether that's for finance or whether it's for HR. And you've referred many times to your peers in Calgary, you know, in the CFO world. How did you come about finding these peers? And how can we give advice to other CFOs who might be listening in small to medium-sized companies? How can we help them to find their peer group?
Yeah, my peer group started from my network out of PwC. First of all, you know, you're an alumni for life, and I started with a great network there. But it's grown since then. And I think one of the things that's really great about the tech community in particular is that similar challenges, very different businesses, you're not competing, right? So the willingness to support each other is there. There's a really great community of people. I think that could show up in other places too. So if you're looking for somebody to build a network, bounce other ideas off of, you could think about similar size businesses, businesses that might be facing similar problems but aren't directly in your space, because they might not be those, right? So the other thing I'd say is I'm just really not shy to reach out to others and ask for help or perspectives. And I think starting with that, I've found that more other people do the same too, and I'm more willing to invite other people along for the ride. So, you know, don't be shy about asking for help would be the other piece.
I love that. I almost feel, Jennifer, that should be one of our taglines, because that's exactly what happened between the two of us. We do a very, very similar business. We were connected by somebody who's a mutual connection to both of us, and immediately just found there was that abundance mentality, that real supportiveness, and both of us having, you know, worked in large teams and really missing the camaraderie have come together, and each of us have also built our own networks. And so you can't underestimate how valuable it is to have peers, even when you may be the only in your company. So I love that.
Kim and I are sort of the more fearless type. So I think that it was kind of easy for us to connect and trust each other and know that we would make something valuable out of our relationship. And I acknowledge that some other people would probably find that a little bit more difficult, but we hit it off immediately. And it's been so valuable just to have each other. I don't know what I would do without a peer group doing what I do at this point. And without Kim, yeah, like it was... I don't know. We really rely on each other so much and it's been so great. And I think it just makes everything easier.
I think once you've had that resource to yourself, I notice a lot more the opportunities that I can connect other people to, right? So when I've seen, you know, someone that I've known in my network who is a lone wolf or doing going out on their own and doing something new to them, and I know that I know somebody else who could provide them with a perspective because I've had that valuable experience, I'm quick to introduce, you know, I'm quick to say, oh, you need to talk to this person or you need to meet them. And whether or not that is helpful for them going forward, at least they've had that opportunity or that touch point. So I think once you've started to rely on those networks on your own, it's really easy to start seeing those opportunities for others too.
That's your people and culture shining right through, Tori. I don't know that all CFOs think the way that you do. That's super unique. Now we'd like to go through some rapid fire questions. So no wrong answers. The first thing that comes to your mind, your first job.
My first job, I worked for the province of Ontario when I was 16 years old. And I was sent to purchase tobacco products. And if people sold to me, then they would get tickets.
Wow, this is
a fascinating
question. Who saw that coming?
That was the best answer I've heard so far.
What? Yeah, it was great. I had to have good attention to detail. I had to take lots of notes. It was fun.
Like a tobacco narc.
I was a tobacco enforcement personnel.
Wild. Wild. I love that. Okay. This is why we asked this question. Who knew? Okay.
Who knew? Best job, Tori. Your best job.
Oh, my best job's my current job. That's the answer, right? No, it is. It really is. Yeah, I feel like every job, you know, each next step I take, I'm just like continuing to learn more. So yeah, this is my best job.
Biggest mess up at work.
Ooh. You know, I was just saying earlier about how like I'm like really open about my mistakes. So I feel like I got to come up with a good one. You know what? This is the one that comes to mind. But we have this beautiful office in Calgary and we invested a lot in our office space. And when I sent the note to our board to like approve the spend for our office, I forgot to include any of the furniture, which is a good chunk change. So I had to send another note out after saying, oh, you know, that number I sent you, it's actually more. So maybe not the biggest, but it's a recent one that comes to mind. And, you know, you always want to come in under budget, not over.
I think that sharing mistakes thing is so important. I think to try to have this perception that you're perfect is so alienating to other people. And it would do wonders for your culture if everybody would just be in the habit of not being so uptight about their slip-ups. But I'm messing up the rapid fire part of rapid fire. So continue on, Kim.
I love it. Best learning.
You know, I think best learning probably comes from mistakes, right? It's the moments that you learn the most. But I would say overall, my time working at PwC was probably like the best training ground. Like it is different problems every week. Different teams, like you're every few weeks you're thrown in with a group of completely different people than you were with a few weeks before. And so learning about different team dynamics while solving different problems, like it's the best learning experience I've had.
And then Jennifer's favorite question, your quickest quit.
I'm not sure the exact time frame that I was there, but one summer in university, I worked for maybe a month as one of those people that stand on the street with the vest and ask you to donate to charity.
Oh, yeah.
And at the time I thought, what a great summer job. I'm going to be outside. I got to talk to people. But I didn't last very long because I didn't do well at pressuring people to make financial decisions on a street corner. So
good for you. Your ethics not showing through.
They were worried that you were trying to narc them.
Maybe. Yeah. I don't know.
She was a better narc than a salesperson.
So Tori, any final words of advice for small and medium-sized businesses who are, you know, thinking to add maybe an HR resource or people and culture team, advice maybe to some CFOs in how to approach that, especially in the early stages of a company?
Yeah, I would say focus on the skills that you might need as opposed to like the background that the person might come from, right? So, you know, as opposed to maybe going in and thinking about building a finance or a people function with a specific checklist of skills and experiences, be open to the possibilities and the skill sets that you're looking for. And those might show up in places you're not expecting.
I love that. Thank you so much, Tori, for taking the time to come chat with us today. We look forward to following you throughout your career and seeing all of your wonderful successes at Stellar Algo and beyond.
Thank you so much for having me.
And that's a wrap on today's episode of Just JKing. We hope you enjoyed the conversation and took away some valuable insights to shake up your own HR game.
If you loved this episode, and we hope you did, make sure to hit that subscribe button, leave us a review, and share it with your network. We want to hear your thoughts, your feedback, and even your own wild HR stories.
And don't forget to connect with us on LinkedIn or drop us a message. Let us know what topics you want us to dive into next.
Until next time, keep it real, keep it human, and always keep JKing.
We'll see you next time on Just JKing. Thanks for listening.